This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, this is RÚV English Radio. My name's Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today. Over the course of the summer, indeed any time of year, I'm always interested to hear about people who are writing or making or composing or performing music, either in Iceland or with a real appreciation of the country at the heart of that creative process. And I think Michael McGlynn, my guest today, falls into the latter category, perhaps, although maybe some of the music that we're going to talk about has indeed been performed and written and recorded here in Iceland as well. Michael runs the Anuna Collective. There are three elements to that. There's a female vocal group called Sister. There's Manam, which is a male voice group featuring Icelandic singers along British and Irish performers, and music created for Anuna as well, the artist Anuna itself, you might say. You've got a new album out with very strong cross-cultural connections to Iceland as well. So a lot to discuss, Michael, joining us from Zoom in Ireland just now, which is where you're from and where you live. Should we just unpack some of that firstly? The collective, as I say, containing those three elements that we've discussed.
That's great. Yeah, it's lovely to be in Ireland, but it's even better to be in Iceland, which I have just left. So I wish we'd met up while we were there, but yes. It's just nice to be able to do this way. It's extraordinary, really, this Icelandic connection to the Anuna Collective. The collective was kind of born in Iceland. When I traveled there in 2015 for the first time, I was massively inspired by the culture and the history and the language and the landscape. I suppose in many ways, the way that I have been inspired by my own culture and my own landscape over the last six decades, God, it's a long time.
That just hit you there, didn't it, I think?
Yeah, I know, when moment. You say it like that, people say for the last few years. But the Icelandic connection, I think, gave birth to the collective because I began to get the idea of these three groups that were interconnected and had this capacity to expand, because Anuna in 2015 was beginning to go through a massive transition. As you know, Anuna is very closely associated with Ireland and has been for, I don't know, since we shot to world recognition in 1994 with Riverdance. Classical music, as you probably know, is not high on the agenda in my country at all. We don't really have a history of it beyond what was imported. But we kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater in many ways. And there was this very strong, very paternalistic effort to, I suppose, squash these foreign influences. And we had this radical nationalist concept that there was a purity in our culture, which was based on our language. And it actually resulted, I think, in a stultifying and a removal of so many facets of what were there before.
Maybe just a bit of housekeeping here, in case anyone has heard the name Sister and think that it rings a bell. We're not talking about the Icelandic female vocal group that entered and represented Iceland at the Eurovision Song Contest a few years ago. did your sister have the name first and a presence first?
No. As far as, I don't know, because I think we spell it differently to the way they did.
You do. I think in Icelandic it's spelled UR, but Sister is spelled IR.
IR. And I wasn't even aware of them. I'd seen actually the Icelandic entry that year. I was in Reykjavik watching it. And I kind of thought, actually didn't really see any connection, because ours is more about the concept of bringing together the idea of sisters, your sister, your wife, your lover, your friend, and a man can have a sister. So we actually have a man who always travels with the group, and sometimes two, because it's not in any way feminist empowering in the traditional sense. It's more a reflection of women telling stories.
Okay. The album, the new album from Anuna, is called Eilífð, which means eternity. Eight original pieces written by you, two arrangements that reflect an interest in Ireland's musical history and tradition. Now, I do want to talk to you a lot about your love of Iceland, but tell me how Icelandic music feeds into this particular album, this particular project. It was partly recorded here, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was virtually all of it, bar one track and a few overdubs, were recorded in the Sun Lounge studio, which is Sigur Rós's
Yes, it's the old
place
swimming
of
pool
rest.
back, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's an amazing space. We loved recording there, and there's a large number of Icelandic singers featured on the album. In fact, most of the singers come from Iceland, and some of them are quite prominent vocalists in the classical music area. But the album itself, it took a long time to record. I began recording it in Iceland in 2022, and some fragments of it actually date back 3 or 4 more years, some of the original tracks from recordings we made in Ireland. But the actual title track is how it reflects on Icelandic music is really subtle. Icelandic traditional music is fascinating. It's really similar in many ways to the ideas of our own here. It is about the bard in the community telling a story. It's about the single voice talking. And then you have this extraordinary form of singing, which belongs to the Icelandic tradition, where people sing in two parts and they sing kind of in parallel harmony. It's really sparse and really open and really dramatic. And it ties in very much with a lot of the ideas that I've been exploring with the music I've created for my three groups over the last, I don't know, particularly in the last decade.
And those two other
So,
groups are featured on the title track, and Mannam and Sister are both featured on the title track, which I think is what we're going to play, certainly,
yeah,
at the end of our
but there are
conversation.
definite connections. There are definite
Yeah.
connections there in the history.
And even just a glance at the track listing will indicate the three elements here or the three influences, because you've got song titles in English and Irish and in Icelandic. So there's a real blend here, isn't there?
There is, yeah, and it's this idea as well of a language that defines a people. In Ireland, if you can speak the Irish language, it allows you to access the history of the land.
What's interesting, I think, talking about language is that there is, of course, a strong historical connection between Ireland and Iceland. And yet, the Irish language, as far as I know, I'm not a linguist, but it seems to be entirely unrelated to Icelandic, which is basically Old Norse. There's much more of a connection between English and Icelandic linguistically than there is between Icelandic and Irish. So it's interesting that the
Yes.
linguistic connection does not seem to exist.
No, I do find that really quite extraordinary myself, because there are, I mean, we know there's a very strong genetic connection, but
Yes.
I suppose I think Irish people are like chameleons. And remember that Icelandic culture is very different to ours. Ours is purely a culture of invasion and adaptation, or not adaptation, adaptation. So when you come and you take large quantities of Irish people and you capture them and you bring them to a country, they integrate. The influence of Irish culture on Icelandic culture is subliminal. It is there. First time I went there, this guy who showed me to my Airbnb or wherever we rented the place from looked like my uncle from
Okay.
Clare. It really did. And you're walking along, and fine, you see a guy who looks like Thor walking along, and then beside him is some guy who came from Turmanfechan. You know, I mean, it is there. And I think also there are certain cultural disconnections, the way we use language and our bluntness when we talk, because Irish people can go, you dirty, whatever, you go, ah, we put a smile on our face. And Europeans are kind of used to that. They go, oh, that's Irish people, don't pay any attention to them. But Icelanders don't do that.
I want to talk about your other visits to Iceland and indeed your wider love of the country, which is evident. As I say, we're going to play the title track of the album at the end of the conversation. I think we've dealt with how the music was created, but your own connection to Iceland.
We were in the Irishman pub singing with Sister there a couple of weeks ago. And it's run by an Icelandic guy, Runar. Hello, Runar. And the staff are all Icelandic. And yet they've meticulously recreated an Irish pub in the middle of Reykjavik.
Yes, and you know what? It was the first place we ever went in 1998 was our first ever trip, and it was the Dubliner.
I was in the Dubliner as well. Yeah, it's also
Yes,
run
yes.
by
So
an
the
Icelandic guy.
Dubliner was in a very slightly different location to the one it is now. The
Ah.
original location, in fact, I think it is a, it's a Mexican restaurant now, indeed, but the Dubliner has moved across the
Very
road.
good Guinness there.
Yes.
Very good Guinness there, I have to say. Yeah, and when I went first, I think I was aware that I wasn't going into a country which had a ghetto. Because I don't like ghettos. I love the idea of being able to interact with people. And when I went there first, I was amazed at how open Icelanders were. I don't say friendly, because friendly is Irish people are friendly, but I wouldn't feel that they were friends as a result of it.
Right. So the
Icelanders are
difference then
much
between
harder
open
to
and the
connect with.
difference between open and friendly would be what? Icelanders were curious or inquisitive or
I think no, not curious, because I think they're very well traveled, so you're not bringing anything that they don't know
okay.
already to their culture. It's more that they don't they're not culturally trained to be insincere in a way that we are.
Okay, so you bring Irish friendliness to Iceland on that trip, and you're met with people who are open but not friendly in the same way. Did you find it difficult then to make what you might call real connections with Iceland?
No, the opposite.
Right.
I've really appreciated the fact that when you talk to people, they said what they felt. And it meant that it's not in the way Dutch people do, who pride themselves in bluntness beyond belief, which we love the Dutch because it's simple. When they say they don't like something, you know it. But if Icelanders are uncomfortable, they'll tell you. And it was quite refreshing. And I know that when I went there first, I still have. I met people there, lots of them, and I'm still friends with them all. We're still connected to all of them in a way that sometimes is really quite emotionally profound to me. Whereas I just think it's much easier to connect with people in a country which is so small.
Yes.
People are used to the idea that they are, I'm really going to, if I can be clear with people, then my directness will maybe forge a genuine connection.
And I think, and we've spoken about this before, that maybe the relatively small size of the very small size of the country, let's face it, lends itself to collaboration because there's a need
That's the word.
and
That's
certainly when it comes
now
to
you
work.
have it. Now you've got it. That was exactly what came out of my trip. In fact, one of the people I met on that first trip, Margaret Bousdotter, and I'm terribly sorry for strangulating her second name. She actually, although I met her 10 years ago in Iceland for the first time, she actually was the one that was responsible for bringing Sistir to Iceland this last month. And it took, she has remained in connection. I meet her when I go over there. She's an amazing woman. And when people say they're going to do something, they do it. And that is it's great. It means that you're connecting with people. And when they say, "I really like this," they mean, "I really like this." Where in Ireland, people say, "Oh, I really like that," and then you never hear from them again. We've too much choice. It's too many
Yes.
people. Everyone's an artist in Ireland.
Has it
You
worked both ways then? Have you brought artists from Iceland to Ireland?
no.
Would
In
you like to?
fact, well, no, because my group Anuned don't work in Ireland at all. I've brought singers, yes, I've brought singers in Mannheim.
Sure.
They've performed a couple of times in Ireland, but no, there's no reciprocal connection.
How often are you here? Because you've been in Iceland very recently. As we said, we weren't able to meet at that point. We're having this conversation on Zoom. But when were you last in Iceland?
Well, I was here last month. With Sistir came in their first visit to Iceland, and in I think in 4 days in Iceland they did six appearances, and they went everywhere, did everything with everyone, and they had an amazing response. So they're definitely coming back at least next year. If I can get them back earlier, I will. They really came in preparation for the debut of Anuna in Iceland, and they will debut in the early autumn next year. we're organizing a kind of a festival around the appearance. And
Yes.
Monum have already performed in Iceland. They performed in it's no, I think a year or two ago. So they've been there. But again, that connection there, it's not established right. The parent needs to come and bring the siblings because Anuna is, it has a reputation and it has a substantial heft, if you know what I mean. So
Yes.
I'm hoping it will connect much better.
Well, I was going to ask about future plans. You've partly answered that, but beyond what you've said, when do you think you will be returning to Iceland, working with Icelandic performers once again?
Well, I'm currently working on a large scale orchestral, probably instrumental orchestral. I haven't decided on the size of the orchestra yet with a friend of mine over there. And I intend recording that either in the late autumn or early next year, which will involve Icelandic musicians, a lot of them. And I will record it and ideally mix it over there if I can. Because I think that, you see, I'm first and foremost a composer, and I am not under anyone's agenda. I don't create music, as you can probably, having listened to Eilíft, you can hear I'm not pandering to taste. Anuna produces its own music, and excuse my French, I don't give a shit what people think. I really don't. I'm old enough and ugly enough at this stage of my life to just make my own decisions based on what I want to do. And I'm also going deaf, and I don't know how long I have. I have a condition which is progressive, and as it progresses forward, I need to prioritize the things that matter to me. So this is one that does. It's very important for me to write as much as I can, as long as I can. I may never go completely deaf, but at the moment I have enough hearing that I can work in acoustic spaces. So hopefully it won't get worse before I get back to do this project.
That must really focus the mind then in terms of priorities, in a way that you don't want to have to prioritize.
Yeah, it does. And there's not really a choice, you know. You the world deals you something and you just deal with it, you know. I wouldn't be the only one with this condition or a similar one to it, but a lot of people don't say it. And the problem is because people don't talk about deafness very much. It's kind of seen as a stigma for a musician, and all you get is people feeling sorry for them. But if you think about it, if you're ill in any way, you're always working against the clock, you know?
You talked as well about not really caring what people make of your music, and I'm sure
Yeah.
that's true to a very great extent, but you must have had some gratifying responses to the music.
I think what's really weird, Darren, is this Anuna's reviving again. Because we've been around so long and our association has been with Ireland for so long, which has not helped us, because in Ireland they love, and I say they because I am not part of the infrastructure in any way, they love to put you into a box. And musically, Anuna, from the moment it was conceived and created, I mean, just giving you an example, my influences in music are David Bowie, Stockhausen, and Ligeti, contemporary composers, and medieval music and traditional Irish music, and I mean, just name it, Sigur Rós. You know, so I don't fall into a specific category, and Anuna doesn't either. It just is. You know,
It's
it's an
such a shame
artist.
to be branded, for any musician or artist to be branded in that way, particularly as we now live in a time when the entire history of recorded music is available to sample, on a device that we all carry in our
Precisely.
pockets, which is kind of incredible, which is why, I like Taylor Swift and Xenakis, another sort of modern composer.
There
And
are
that's
connections.
because it's possible to access all the different music that both of these people have made in their lives. When you're in Iceland, then, it sounds like you don't suffer, if that's the right word to use, from that stereotyping.
No, I think in Iceland, you can be sitting talking to somebody and they're a politician and they also grow chili peppers and can them and then sell them. And in Iceland, you can go into a small place and just be yourself. Now, you mightn't integrate into the local community, but one thing I will say, a lot of that lack of integration is based on a lack of cultural understanding of people. People are going to be best friends with people that they went to school with, and you're never going to be that. And unless you speak the language, you're never going to be able to understand the context of a lot of the things Icelanders say, nor the controversies that exist in their lives. But the fact of the matter is that they are much more accepting of difference. And I hate to use the word tolerant. I think most of the people I know in Icelandic or in Iceland appear to be neurodivergent to a greater or lesser extent. So people that maybe don't fit into categories easily, like myself, it's just easier to communicate. People listen to you and they go, "Okay, well, he's completely weird." "Oh yeah, but I know lots of people who are weird." "Oh, he's okay.
Yeah.
I'll go with him." And even Irish people that go there, I met a few great Irish people there who are just the salt of the earth. And I think they're allowed to be themselves in Iceland in a way maybe they're not at home.
Well, I'm going to play two tracks actually, as our conversation draws to a close. As I said, we'll play the title track of the Anuna album, Eilífð, which means eternity. But I also want to, after that, play Surtur Ungur ástin mín, which is an
Aha,
Icelandic
yes.
lullaby as well. Just a couple of words on that. What does it do
Well,
on the
it's
record?
there. It's well, I mean, at the risk of being controversial, it is a piece which every Icelander knows. They know that melody, but it's not that melody. It goes back to the original play. The mother looks at the child and talk looks at the child as she nurses it, and she talks about the little toys it plays with, the little bones that are part of Icelandic nursery culture. I think they're made of lamb bones. She talks about that, and she talks about the darkness of the sand, and there's darkness within us all. And then she takes the baby and she throws it off a waterfall. Because in play, that's what she does. And I think that Icelanders forget its context. In this world of sheer horror, a lullaby, which was traditionally sung by a woman, is sung by a young man. And this young man, Thorhallur, is a I'm afraid to say his full name, Thorhallur Áður Helgason. He's part of actually the opera group Óðr, who've made such a splash in Reykjavik in recent times. He's a dad, like myself. And my own voice, although I sing tenor, my own voice, I mean, I'm an old guy now. He's only early 30s. When he sings it's got a vulnerability that is very different. He sings about this horrendous act of the father. But in the end, we hear Bryndís singing off into the Icelandic landscape. She's a woman. She's the one that threw him over the waterfall. And for me, there is a profundity both to this juxtaposition of the way men and women have to think today, and also this horror, horrific beauty that is intrinsic within the Icelandic landscape. And there's a video, I made a video for it as well, and you see him singing it in studio live, and then we just open out to him in the landscape. And that, I don't know why people think the Icelandic landscape is beautiful. I find it horrific. It's
I
absolutely terrifying.
think you're looking
In
at the wrong
Ireland,
parts, maybe.
you
That's
know,
what's going
it
on here.
actually rains. It rains in Ireland, and we think, "Oh, it's so harsh." It rains in Iceland, and you can die. It's a
But it's
different
also a
vibe.
beautiful rain. I'm one of the few people who came to Iceland partly because of, not to despite the weather. That's a whole other conversation, I think, because I think it is very beautiful when it's dark and windy and wet and
You're
rainy.
like me. I love that. I
Roll on
love that.
October is what
Yeah, that's I've
I.
got it. That's my favorite time to come to Iceland. But
Yes.
I do think there is something profound in there, and that song in particular. It's based on, I suppose, the ideas of the American poet Robert Frost. He has a wonderful poem called "Two Look at Two" about a man and a woman looking across a glade at a stag and a doe, and they're having this kind of connection. But there is no connection because they're wild animals. They can never connect to them. They can never understand them. But we as human beings, like Oscar Wilde said, we look at a sunset. It has no beauty unless we look at it. That's the way I view Iceland. Its beauty is in the way we respond to it. And I'm overwhelmed by it. I suppose in the same way I'm overwhelmed by landscapes in all places.
Well, let's.
Mainly by, I think, my response as an artist. So that's what that piece is about.
Okay. Well, let's hear that. And as I say, the title track of the album, First, which was recorded over a 3-year period, very largely here in Iceland. Michael, it'll be great to meet you when we can the next time you're back in Iceland. Maybe it's going to be in October when it starts to rain, and although the weather
I
this
think
week
it could
certainly to have the
be.
conversation, it's going to feel very autumnal this week anyway.
No, I am actually back. I'm actually coming back at the beginning of November. I'll
Okay.
definitely be back.
Well, let's make a note to meet up in person then. For now, our
Definitely.
conversation comes to a close. But Michael McGlynn, thank you very much for your time today. It's Roof English Radio. My name's Darren Adam, and you can get in touch anytime. We're english@ruv.is.
There is more from RÚV English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. RÚV English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.